With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hello and welcome to Who Am I This Time? With me, David Morrissey. Each episode, I'm talking to performers from film, television and theatre about one significant role in their career. It might not always be the role they're most famous for, but in each one, I'll be trying to find out about the preparation, the excitement and the sense of nostalgia that goes with any key role in an actor's lifetime. After several supporting roles in television, Ruth Madeley was nominated for a BAFTA for her performance in Don't Take My Baby, which told the story of a disabled couple's fight to prevent their baby from being taken away from them. Her career has seen her appear in The Rook, The Cleaner, and Russell T. Davis's stunning TV series, Years and Years. She's also appeared on stage at places like the Old Vic and the Donmar Warehouse. In 2019, Ruth signed an open letter urging Hollywood executives to normalize disability by casting disabled actors to play disabled characters. I caught up with her earlier this year to talk about her starring role as Barbara Lisitsky in Jack Thorne's BBC drama, Then Barbara Met Adam. Hello and welcome to the show. This week, my guest is Ruth Madeley, who you might have seen recently in the wonderful drama Then Barbara Met Alan, which I just thought was fantastic, Ruth. I really did. I thought it was brilliant. Now, tell us a little bit about it. Tell me a little bit about the story for those of us who haven't seen it and a little bit about the character of Barbara as well.
So Barbara and Alan were artists, they were creatives, they were cabaret performers, musicians, very, very creative people who were both disabled, and they met and they fell in love and both set up they co-founded the Direct Action Network, or DAN, and that really was about disabled people getting together to fight for their civil rights, because they... disabled people had no rights in this country.
And this was the 90s, was it?
Yeah. And basically their protests and disruption and civil disobedience led to the passing of the Disability Discrimination Act in 1995. So essentially Then Barbara Met Alan is a love story, but it's also about the protests that happened and the toll that took on their relationship and their health as well.
Yeah. And they had a baby, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Baby after.
Yeah, that was amazing. So it was a great show. I mean, were you aware of them? Were you aware of Dan before the show started?
I knew bits. I was a little dot when this was happening. So I was a kid that this was not anything in my kind of my social awareness, I guess. And I was very lucky to grow up as a young teenager with the law behind me because of what they did. But I think naturally when you're disabled and you just naturally start learning about things that affect you. So as I got older and, you know, social media and the internet and everything, I Googled and watched clips on YouTube and things like that. So I was aware of the protests. I was always very aware that the government didn't just say one day, oh, let's do something that gives disabled people equal rights. I knew that that wasn't the case. So I knew it was something that had to be fought for. But I didn't know about Barbara and Alan's love story. I didn't really know much about the people of the Direct Action Network. So it was more, I knew of it, but nothing specific.
So as a project, when did, because I know you've worked with Jack Thorne before.
Yeah.
On the wonderful Don't Take My Baby, which we'll talk about later. But did the project come to you via him, or was it due to conversations that you and him had had together? Or because it was Genevieve Barr was also one of the writers, wasn't she? So there was the two of them. Did they approach you early on?
They did. Jack actually approached me early on. He, I think it was like the end of 2019, because we were meant to film this during the pandemic, and obviously the world started ending. But it, well, yeah, so Jack came to me at, say, the end of 2019, and he'd been approached by Dragonfly production company to write this story for BBC. And he said, I'll do it if you do it. And that was it.
Did you know there was a love story at the heart of it at that point?
Yeah, he told me about, he said, there's a massive lead in this. We want to tell this story. He told me a little bit about the story in general. And he told me it was a love story then. And then he said, there's two people I want. I want you and I want Genevieve. Mm-hmm. And if I get them, we'll do it. I was all in straight away.
And so what happens then? Jack says, look, I want you. There's a story. There's no script. There's just him pitching it to you then.
Yeah.
And so what happens then? Does he sort of go away and write it? Do you say, I'm into it, or whatever? Are you involved in auditioning other people? Did you, read with Arthur, who plays your...
I did read with him. Yeah, it was really great, because Jack and Genevieve, they work so well together. They're just incredible, both of them. Individually, they're brilliant. And then you put them together and it's like magic. And they went away and wrote, you know what it's like, draft after draft after draft. And I was sent some early drafts and just to have a read, have a chit chat and see where it was going. It felt very collaborative, in the sense of they really wanted to tell the story right. They really wanted to make sure I was comfortable, this, that and the other. And then when we finally post pandemic, well, it's not really, but after we came out of lockdown, we were able to talk about casting. And
did you meet Barbara though? Did you meet Barbara before all this?
I didn't meet Barbara until quite late on, because Jack and Jen were working with her, mm-hmm. and Alan, to make sure they were happy with the story and what we were telling. So I met Barbara quite late on. It was probably around the same time as casting, actually. I'd say it was around the same time.
And from the script, did you made assumptions about Barbara that when you met her changed?
I'd watched lots of YouTube videos of her interviews and things mm-hmm. like that, and her performing. So I was just really excited to meet her. And if I'm honest, she was everything that I thought she'd be and more. Mm-hmm. She was just, she's a really intelligent woman, and she's so ballsy. And you after 5 minutes of being with her, you could tell why she got done what she got done,
And before portraying her, did you feel the weight? Obviously, there's a weight of responsibility, but did you feel intimidated? Was she around a lot? It's not an impersonation, is it? You have to interpret the character inside there as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The last thing I wanted to be was like a caricature of her. Mm. I wanted it to be a really strong portrayal of her. And a different, because this is, we flip back in time as well. So it comes from past to present. So there was a lot of showing her at different stages of her life as well. So, I wanted to make sure I watched her mannerisms. I thought that was really important. And also just how she speaks about things, how she talks about certain points in her life, how she talks about certain people in her life. So, but I was really, it's the first time I've ever played a person who was involved in the whole process and who would be around to see it.
Yeah, what was that like? I mean,
absolutely terrifying. I did feel such a weight of responsibility. And I guess because of the subject matter being so personal, it meant so much.
It's important to say it's groundbreaking television, this. I mean, it really is. You know, it's this, and we'll talk about this later as well, is, you know, we've not seen characters like this portrayed on television before, in my experience, I don't think. Yeah. So it is, you must have felt that responsibility, but also that must have been really exciting as well.
It was so exciting. It was, I mean, I am constantly frightened in my job, and I feel that drives me.
Me too.
I'm always nervous. And I think this just felt like a really, really important challenge. But more than that, as terrified as I was, it was such an honour to be trusted with something like that. Mm-hmm. And to have her trust me as well, because she could have quite easily turned around and say, who on earth is this? Where have you got her from? And she didn't, thank God. Yeah. So, it was really, really nerve-wracking and incredibly... it was a real humbling experience as well, very, very humbling. Barbara wasn't around until like the end.
So she's in it as well, as there's a great scene between the two of you on the bus.
So I, as soon as I read that in the draft, I was like, oh my goodness, that was that was such a special day on set. It really was.
I mean, there's obvious things, and I know you've thanked people in on your social media, but I think just things like accent, you know, she doesn't have your accent, so you're working on that. And what else are you working on to find her? She has a very specific energy to her, very sick, not just an accent, but she has this delivery that is really quite
sharp.
It's not an attack, but it's sharp, isn't it? Yeah, she's really,
really sharp.
And how did you find that?
You know something, it was, the writing was so incredible. You get so much from Jack and Jen's words and bouncing off Arthur, who is incredible. Yes. I found it very helpful to watch. Every morning on the way to set, I would listen to something, whatever, on YouTube of Barbara talking. And I found that really helped to just have her in your head. But I really think that the dialogue and everything that Jack and Jen gave us, it really helped with that. And it did help me to know. It really helped me to know, because the first thing she said to me was, you're not using the accent, are you? And I was like, hey, that's what I need to keep in my head. That's the kind of thing she'd say.
And because that's important to her. And I think that's, you know, you are honouring that person, I guess.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't have wanted to do it. It just wouldn't have been, especially at the end, it wouldn't have been the same if I'd not done the accent. But I mean, I'll admit, accents are not something that come easily to me. I really have to work at them. But that helped as well. That really helped.
But that's also, I think, you know, you do all that work before you get to the set. You have to do so much work so that when you get to the set, you're free of that.
Months before, I was working on the accent, and my dialect coach Martin McClellan, he's fantastic. He really dialect and accent fascinates me, because it completely changes the way your tongue placement, the way you breathe. Like Barbara's words are really heavy, whereas I'm up here and really excited, and she just isn't.
Yeah. So that's that in a way, that's an energy where we place our energy, isn't it? There's a different energy. I used to have, for certain characters, I would like have a tick list just before I would get onto the set to go, remember his energy is more here. Remember that his voice is that. Remember that, you know, just to keep myself in that placement, really.
Very much. And then as well, I had massive help from our directors, who I'm just obsessed with, both of them, Bruce Goodison and Amit Sharma, because we were flipping from different times throughout the film, we'd have a chit chat about where she was emotionally at this point. Was she angry? Was she quite sad? Because that affects like your breathing and how heavy your words sit in your chest and things like that. So it was a very collaborative thing, and it definitely wasn't me just rocking up as Barbara every single day and going home. It was very much a collaborative thing, very much. Now,
your background is creative writing. I mean, you sort of became an actress accidentally. Did you?
Complete accident, David. Yeah.
So I know you went to Edge Hill and University, which is a place I love and know very well. But you did creative writing there, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you use that when now as your would you when you're doing something like Then Barbara Met Alan, would you write a Bible to not interview with Jack and Jen's script in any way, but would you have a Bible to the side of that of your own story or where she is at any one time or anything like that?
I scribble all over my scripts. So at uni, I did creative writing, but my major was script writing. Mm-hmm. So that was I learned how scripts are, you know, constructed, how characters are built, how important dialogue is and when it's important to use it and when it's not. So when I get a script, I scribble all over it, my own kind of notes on emotion, why characters make certain choices. And I definitely feel my knowledge of scripts and the writing process, I definitely feel it helps with my acting. Mm-hmm. Because it just feels a little bit more 3D, I guess.
You when use I'm... backstory. Would you write backstory like for Anna in Don't Take My Baby? Would you write backstory for people?
Sometimes, yeah, yeah. Maybe not for the whole thing, maybe at certain points where I feel like it's really helpful. And again, with Barbara, when we're flipping between different times, like all the bits at the bus stop where she is just her talking, I'd write a lot about where she was there because so much has happened to get her to that point that you have to kind of remember. And don't forget, all those bus stop scenes were pretty much shot in one day. So you have to get quite a lot of like emotion and where your head is at in one day of shooting.
And but also they'll be filmed all over the place. Well, we film out a sequence all the time.
Not at all. So writing, you know, little chunks of things that really help me figure out where she is placement wise in the story, I found really helpful.
And from an accent point of view, do you use any sort of tapes or anything like that? Would you record Barbara or record your sessions with the accent coach and play them back to you at all?
I would listen to, again, for going to set every day, I would listen to her. I would make sure, I remember Bruce, one of our directors said to me, every time you step on set, I don't want to hear your accent. I don't want to hear your accent until we've finished the entire shoot.
Great.
So, and that really helped because because I do breathing exercises every morning, mm-hmm. and weirdly tongue exercises. So because fascinating things. So my tongue is really flat because I'm Northern. And the tongue placement for a London accent is like further back. My tongue would kill me at the end of the day because it would just constantly sat in a different space. It's a proper science. It fascinates me.
No, it's like being an athlete. I think of it as an athlete. One of our podcasts this season is I've interviewed three people. One is a stunt coordinator. Who I work with. One is an accent coach who I've worked with, and the other one is an intimacy coach. And we've done a podcast about all three disciplines. And I do think there's, you know, being an actor, it's like that sort of being an athlete that my tongue, like your tongue, is a Northern tongue. It has a default setting. It goes, it wants to be there. I have to work really hard for ages before I started up to get different muscles that I've never used to make sounds.
I'd come off, I'd be like, oh my God, it's so sore. But I just found it, if I was keeping it up the whole day, if I was having conversations like in the makeup chair, when you're having your breakfast, when you're having lunch, if you're having those conversations back in your, you know, natural accent, it would be harder to get back into what you're meant to be in for the shoot.
And it's important to say at this point that some people can do that. I mean, I've worked with people who can just jump in and out of accents all the time.
It's so annoying. I can't. It really frustrates me.
And I'm not. There's some accents I can do that with, but other accents I need to work in and I need to have.
If there's like a few that I can do for absolutely fine, and I know I can just go back to it. But yeah, some of them, and because Barbara has a really specific, it's a very specific type of London as well. That I had to work at it, but I found actually that actually really helped with building her character anyway.
Yeah.
You know, really for months, just finding her voice in me.
And what, when you talked about the directors, I mean, what do you feel that you need from a director to create the space for you to be brave in and to be open and vulnerable and all the things we need to be? What are you looking at from a director to create that space?
Just a conversation. I think that's a big thing. Just open conversation about understanding where the character is, both understanding what you want to get out of the scene. I really enjoy, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I will always say, give me another one, because I think I can do it better. Mm-hmm. But I've really learned that if we've done a few and the director says they're happy, then I have to learn to be like, right, okay, right, leave it. They're happy, they've got what they want. Mm-hmm. But I really like it as well when you know that they've got what they want and they just kind of let you, the freedom as well, the freedom to play and try something a bit different, because you can find some magic in that as well. But I love working with directors, and Bruce and Amit were just the most incredible team on this job. They were so good. You had, you know, Bruce with his real, you know, vision, technicality, everything was just so spot on. And then Amit, who was very much the one to, you know, bring you to the side and really talk to you about why they're saying certain things, why we're at this point in the script, and he'd make you question your what you thought about where you were. And I quite like that challenge to figure out between you what you want to get out of the scene.
Well, what I love about that is, you know, that someone is seeing you. That, you know, that there. I mean, I've worked with directors who you think this person isn't even looking at me. You know, that's
conversation. I know that we're working on the same thing. Not someone's falling asleep.
Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, one of the other things talking about the other podcast we're doing, you know, with an intimacy coach.
Mm.
There's a wonderful scene with you and Arthur Hughes, who plays Alan. Yeah. Which is a wonderful sort of tragic love scene, because it really is
so sad.
It's really heartbreaking, because you feel that these people are breaking up, really, yeah. You know, at the point. Yeah. And also in Don't Take My Baby, there's a wonderful scene with your other co-star, Adam Long, where, you know, you're in a bath with your baby and stuff like that. Again, there's a vulnerability we have to go through there. Did you have intimacy coaches, or was that something that they do as a dialogue that you and the other actors and the directors would have together?
Then Barbara Met Alan was the first time I'd worked with an intimacy coordinator, and I loved it. It was like the most incredible. She Lucy, who came on set, she was, and her colleague Adelaide, they were both just incredible. The whole process I found so helpful, really helpful. And I just felt the work that we did, and the same with Amit and Bruce, we were all very much a team, Arthur, Amit, Bruce, myself and Adelaide, and then Lucy when she came on set. It was very much a collaborative, we have to get this scene right. And when you watch it back, with the work that we did shows, you know what I mean?
Mm. And what type of things would she be doing? I mean, is it just a case of her checking in with you? Or would she also talk to the crew and sort of find a sensitivity around them as well about what closed set or whatever that
was? Yeah, we had closed set. So basically, the only people who should be there were, we had sound already set up in the room, so we didn't need, you know, a boom or anything in there. We had Susie, our fantastic DOP. She was obviously had to be there, script supervisor, and then our two directors, and that was it. There was no one else. So when we talked about all of this beforehand, all of this wasn't just to kind of turn up to set and then hope that there's going to be a closed set. It was all very much set up beforehand. We knew exactly what was going to happen, who was going to be in the room or watching on screen and who wasn't.
Mm.
And it was really interesting to talk about that scene because it is so, it's not just a sex scene, it's really sad.
It's got loads and loads of story in it. I mean, whenever those scenes come up, even, you know, not just intimacy scenes like that, but it's fights, any scene really. Yeah. What I'm looking at is, what is the story of this scene? And obviously certain scenes, if they're a fight scene or an intimate scene, there's an added difficulty to them sometimes. But it is always about why is it here, what's it telling me? And there's so much story in the scene that you did.
There's so much, and it's so loaded. There's so much emotion of where, I mean, no spoilers, but obviously they've had, you know, a tragedy happen. They're a really low point in their relationship. There's so much that has come to this. Physically, they're not great. You know, they've been on protest. They've got, you know, they're looking after the baby. So there's just so much to it that it's not just about sex. And the work that we did beforehand was really making sure we got that story across. And also making sure we were both comfortable with the nature of they say it's like a dance, don't they? It's properly choreographed, which is it's like a fight scene. Everything's choreographed. And then once we knew all of that was in place, it's then about us being free in that moment to do what felt right. And I mean, Arthur and I couldn't have wished for a better co-star. I just think he's incredible. So we were both really, really determined to get that scene right. And as well, the disabled actors, disabled people, we don't get those scenes on screen. We're never given the opportunity to show our bodies in different ways. And so we felt that extra weight of responsibility as well, that we wanted to do it really beautifully.
We'll be back with more chat after this.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, you're listening to Who Am I This Time? With me, David Morrissey. Now, back to this week's episode. But also what's great is that responsibility, and I mean this in the best sense, is it doesn't come across on screen. You don't feel that these are actors acting their responsibility for doing the role. They're just telling the story, and that's what's wonderful about it. You know? And that's true of Don't Take My Baby as well, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, we said before about you being an accidental actress. you wanted to be a screenwriter. So you wanted to be in the creative industry, didn't you? But that's not from family, is it? You didn't have that in your family.
No, not at all. No, not at all. I always knew that. I just knew that there wasn't anybody like me on TV growing up. I never saw myself, ever. Mm-hmm. And I always, at the heart, I'm a storyteller. That's what I am. And I knew that I'd always loved writing since I was tiny. I used to love writing stories and, you know, making up characters and all of that stuff. So I always knew that I wanted to be part of a drive to increase disability representation. And I always knew that I loved storytelling. So it just naturally felt that that would be something that I would do, I guess, in the industry. But I never in front of camera. It was never... That was never planned.
So how did that happen? It was a CBBC show, was it? Well, how did that happen?
Oh, yeah, it was hysterical. I was doing a work placement at BBC. Because, again, from, you know, going to uni, I wanted just a little bit more experience of how scripts are prepared, how they're chosen, you know, for commission, all of that stuff. So I was just doing a bit of work experience, and a producer that I'd met along the way said that they were looking for a wheelchair user for a CBBC drama, just a one episode. And they just were kind of like, well, you're here, you might as well go. And I was, I literally just went to be nosy. I thought, oh, this is fun. I'll meet a director, I'll meet a producer, I'll see how things get cast. I can ask questions. So I didn't really think it through at all. I literally went down the corridor and went purely to be nosy and a bit of, you know, for completely selfish reasons, thinking, well, this is a fantastic networking opportunity. And I remember going into the room, or being outside the room, and seeing these other actresses, and I was like, and I started feeling really nervous, and I had absolutely no expectation whatsoever. And I remember thinking, why do these people put themselves through this? Actors are strange breed of people. Why do you do this to yourself? And then, yeah, got in there, had a chit chat, which was really nice with the producer and the director. And it was just a really weird experience. And I remember a bit of adrenaline hitting me. And when I came out, I thought, I want to do that again.
Right.
And I got the job. Now I got the job. So either there was really, really bad people going for that job, or I'd pulled it out of the bag in a spectacular fashion.
But I'm sure it's that one. I'm sure it's the latter.
But I turned up on set, and that I think that's when I fell in love with it. I loved being on set, and I was fascinated by how many people are on a set and how many people it takes to make a program. Mm. And that just completely blew me away. And I always say I'm a bit like a sponge on set. I want to know everybody's job, and I want to know how everyone's doing. And
I think that's really important. I think it's very, I remember my first times on set, I was really inquisitive about what everybody did. I wanted to know what everybody did. And not because, you know, I was just fascinated by the process. Yeah.
Me too. That's what it was. It was complete fascination on my part. And I haven't lost that.
No, and I love the team aspect of it as well.
Oh, God, me too. And I think that's what I fell in love with. Mm-hmm. Not being in front of the camera, I think it was the team aspect of from the second you're picked up by your unit driver to going in the makeup chair, although every process was a real team thing. And yeah, that was my very first taste of it, unless we count my, you know.
Your Mary.
My primary school Mary.
Well, that's well talked about, your nativity Mary, I have to say. I thought we could have done a whole show on that, actually, but
you could make an entire show of it. It was a spectacular performance.
But you know, let's get on to Don't Take My Baby, because a BAFTA-winning show. Mm. Very different, obviously, a very different tone. Very, really, again, written by Jack Thorne.
Yeah.
About a couple who have a baby and then are monitored by social services, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, what sort of, when that came along to you, that your audition process for that was quite a long one, wasn't it? That went on for a while.
It was hideous. It was awful. After I did the CBBC thing, and I did like a bit part in Fresh Meat with Jack Whitehall, but after that, I didn't really do anything. I didn't really seek out like acting, because I still didn't really see that as a career option. I thought it would be just something I'd do on the side. And then the agent I was with at the time had this script fall on her desk, and it was Don't Take My Baby. And I remember saying, if you get this, everything changes. And as soon as I read it, I was, I knew Jack Thorne was a giant.
Yeah.
In his career, and then and as soon as I read his words, I was like, I have to play this character. I was like, this is, I have to. There was no other option. And I went for the audition, and don't forget, I didn't train. I had no lead actress experience apart from Mary. And so they really had nothing to back up my audition. So they didn't know that I could handle a lead in something that was really quite harrowing and hard hitting and emotionally, you know, taxing, all of that stuff. So I wasn't an easy sell, really. And it was a really long audition process because they had to make sure that they could.
And it was it was for all the actors, wasn't it? I mean, didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was a really long. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, it was a really small cast. So the chemistry and everything had to be, you know, just right for to tell the story. Cause that was based on a real couple. We weren't playing particular characters, but the story was based on a real couple and their real story. And I'll never forget when I got.
Didn't you have to come down to RADA at one point to do a whole workshop? What was that? What happened there?
It was the most bizarre thing I've ever done in my life, and I remember.
So you have been to RADA. You can say that, Ruth.
Yeah, I can. I'm going to put it's on my spotlight. Went to RADA one day. It was weird because we were doing workshops with other actors who were going for the same role, which is like terrifying in itself. And it was really kind of looking at chemistry, pairing up with different actors, seeing how different people look in different.
And were you doing improvisations or were you reading bits of scene or?
Both. We did both. You know what? It's kind of a bit of a blur, a bit of a nightmare, really. But no, it was. But it was that was the first time I met Jack in person, and Ben Anthony, our director, and I just loved getting to know them, you know, make friends with the director first thing and foremost. It was a really bizarre, wonderful experience. And I remember it. It was just so bizarre, but I still didn't hear for about a month after that because there was like going down for different chemistry reads with different people. And the week before Christmas, I finally got the call to say, we want to book you. And I was just like, oh, thank God. I don't know what I would have done at the end of that if they'd said no. I don't think I would have acted again. I think I would have been like, this is not for me. This process is torture.
It's a brilliant piece. And, you know, again, a bit like Then Barbara Met Alan, it's something that, you know, is groundbreaking telly and was recognised as such at the BAFTAs.
Yeah, that was incredible to be nominated and then have the.
And you were nominated as best actress as well. That must have been so wild.
Ridiculous, David. Absolutely ridiculous. Complete madness to have disability put at the top of the top of the pile BAFTA, you know, and then to win and to see Jack and Pitt and Ben on the stage talking about the importance of these stories, that did nothing but give me fire to tell more stories and carry on with increasing disability representation on as big scale as possible.
But that piece particular, I mean, both pieces have very, very, as we've spoken about, harrowing and upsetting moments.
Yeah.
But that piece, you know, for you as a relatively inexperienced actress on that, would you do things like, would you watch yourself on the monitor at all? Or would you just trust Ben, the director, or what?
Ben told me to watch. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. Watching myself back, there is literally nothing more hideous that I feel. But he was right. It helps.
Okay. In what way?
Because I remember him saying to me, come and watch this. Come and watch this. And I'd be like, are you asking me if I want to, or are you telling me to come and watch it? And he'd be like, no, I want you to come and watch this. And when he explained, you need to tweet this or do this, I was like, I see what you mean. And then it definitely helped.
It is a baptism of fire, isn't it? When you're
It was really a baptism of fire. It was thrown in at the deepest end you could possibly go in. Because there was everything in it. There was, you know, I was playing a disability that wasn't my disability. So I wasn't in my own wheelchair, which mm-hmm. feels alien enough as it is. Yeah. My character didn't have good usage of her arms. She didn't have great muscle in her arms. And when you're holding somebody else's baby whilst looking like you don't have strong muscles in your arms, that's a whole other level of terror. There was nudity in it. There was a love story in it. There was lots of, you know, crying.
But tell me about working with the baby, because, you know, I've done dramas that need newborns and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a very odd sort of delicate time, though, isn't it? Because their own parents are there, obviously, or chaperones or whatever. But that thing of, it fascinates me, a baby being handed over to you and you having to play someone with weak arms.
Honestly, I've never been more terrified in my life. It was, don't take my baby. We had six babies. We had two sets of twins, a 6 month old, and then, no, we didn't. We had five babies. Mm-hmm. We had two sets of twins and then a 6 month old. So we had a lot of babies to work with, but the first set of twins, they were like weeks old.
Yeah.
And they were like tiny. And it was just like, and this woman who's obviously their mother, she gave birth like 6 weeks ago or something crazy. Yeah. And you're like, oh, it was such a massive weight of responsibility. But I was, the team couldn't have been more helpful. So they made sure I had like cushions to mm-hmm. so the baby was fully supported. I'm literally holding my arm as rigid as possible to hold this child without, and then keeping my arms locked so it looked like I didn't have great muscle tone, but I'm holding this child with literally every bit of muscle I have. Great experience. I mean, if you can work with kids, you can work with anything, right?
But when you're doing a job like that, do you take it home with you? Or is it something that you carry with you? I mean, because it's so...
Yeah.
I mean, I cried buckets while watching it. But I'm just...
Yeah, it was really... The whole thing came from... The whole story came about from an article around the statistics of how many disabled parents are.
It says 11,000 at the end.
11,000 a year are investigated to see if they're deemed capable or fit enough to look after their children. And, you know, I'm not a mom, but and I can remember thinking, God, if I start a family one day, am I going to have social services knocking at my door for no other reason than I'm disabled?
Yeah.
And that was very, I mean, Jack has got such an incredible way with words that he makes you feel everything. And it is really hard to switch off. And as that was my first lead and my real first proper acting job in the sense of feeling every emotion, it was something that I had to learn how to switch off. And
because your partner isn't an actor, is he? And like your mom and your parents don't come from acting.
No, just me.
Is it difficult to express or articulate what you're going through to them? I mean, when you're at the end of the day at all, or are they very open to all that?
They're pretty good, you know. I think Joe, God love him, my boyfriend, he just, if especially with at the end of Then Barbara Met Alan, that was hard. That was hard graft, like more so than anything else. And I feeling all, there was so much, there was like such a weight of responsibility, everything. And it was really exhausting. And he just kind of knew that if I needed to cry when I came home, I cried.
You said once about, you were doing a monologue called The Greatest Wealth at the Old Vic.
Yeah.
And that's when you came off and went, oh, this is it.
I'd never done theatre, so that was my first experience. I was working with Adrian Lester on an American show called The Rook, and he came up to me at our second block, you know, take read through. And he said, and I knew he was doing, I knew him and Lolita, his wife, Adrian was directing it, and I knew about it. I knew what he was doing, and I saw him come over and I'm thinking, don't you dare ask me to do that. And he came over and he's like, and I'm like, no. He was like, I've sent your agent this thing. Have a look, see what you think. And they're like, they were like 15, 20 minute monologues, these things. And I remember him telling me who else was doing them. Like, we had Art Malik, we had David Twelfth, you know, Mira Sayal, these like powerhouses, absolute powerhouses. And I didn't even read the monologue. I just said at that time, I said, yeah, I'll do it, because I knew if I thought about it, if I slept on it, I'd chicken out. And once I've committed, that's it for me then, once I've committed. And I remember I thought I was going to throw up before I went on it, like the old Vic.
Yeah.
Like a full theatre and this stage. And again, I wasn't in my own chair for that. And trying to remember 20 minutes worth of writing in your head, I was like, this is terror on a whole new level. I've never really understood actors who live for theatre. Because that's never been my experience. I've always, whatever I've done has been screen work. But when I came off, when I remembered my entire monologue, which was great for a start, and then I came off, that feeling, that instant feeling of response, when I stepped off, I was hit with the literally the biggest high ever. And I was like, I get it. I get why actors want to do theatre. I understand it. And that was my first experience of feeling like that, definitely.
And then you did a play called Teenage Dick, didn't you, at the Dunmore?
Yeah.
Tell me about that experience. Having had the experience of the monologue, now you're in a play which is sort of loosely based on Richard III, isn't it?
I loved the whole thing. I thought it would be... I met Daniel Monks. Mm-hmm. And I completely fell in love with him. And for me, it was like, if I get to work with him for 3 months, then I'm very happy. Mm-hmm. And doing American Accent for 3 months, which is where I met my dialect coach.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So the whole process was fascinating to me. That was my first experience of really understanding Tet Week and then Press Night. All of that was completely new to me.
And doing the same story again and again every night. I mean, that's a different discipline, isn't it?
Really? I just remember thinking, how on earth am I going to keep this fresh? How am I not going to get a bit stale with what I'm saying? And it was a really interesting experience to learn that your audience is different every night.
Yeah.
And some things they'll laugh at, and then the next night they won't laugh at all, and then they will make you jump by laughing in a completely different place. And I found it challenging physically. I'm not gonna lie, from a disabled acting perspective, I did find it exhausting on a different level.
How do you look after yourself then? Are you able to sort of pace yourself in a different way in your day or anything like
that? I had to, yeah. I really had to learn that. And you know what? I had to move to London for the whole play. And, you know, this very northern girl didn't find that easy, I'll admit, because for me, London, I find London really inaccessible still. And it's hard. That physically is hard in itself.
Just simply transport or any other sort of...
Just buildings and some of the streets are still really, like, uneven and cobbly, like, especially where the Dunmore is.
It's right by the Dunmore, yeah. Of course, God.
But so physically, it was quite demanding of me. So I had to learn very quickly that, you know, I had to look after myself during the day. If I was on a stage that night, because we had matinees as well, but if I was on stage that night, then I'd be doing nothing during the day apart from resting as much as possible.
And I don't think you can describe that to people until they've done it about one.
No, and I didn't appreciate it until I'd done it at all. I thought, I'll be all right.
Yeah, it's only 2 hours.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I'll be all right. It's fine. I've got this whole day to myself. Right. No, you don't.
You really don't.
And, I think I really enjoyed the whole process of, you know, the rehearsal period beforehand when you really build up this like family feel. Again, same as being on set, that real team feeling. And that was something that I will cherish forever. That family that I made there were brilliant.
I mean, you've worked with great writers. I mean, we mentioned Jack and Jen and stuff, but I mean, you've worked with Russell T. Davis on years and years.
Who's that? I'm sure I've heard that.
Is this young up-and-coming person we might have to keep an eye on?
At the start of his career.
But years and years, you know, and it's in the title, isn't it? It goes over 15 years.
Yeah.
So, again, as a creative writer or, you know, screenwriter yourself, are you filling in the gaps there for Rosie, your character? Are you sort of looking at where, how she's growing in those?
Definitely. Filling in the gaps, especially with her relate, because the whole thing was based on relationships and things. Mm-hmm. So it was looking at how her relationships have evolved, changed, how she was a bit wild, was Rosie. She was so scatty and a bit all over the place. So she was a very emotional person. So there was quite a lot to play with there. And also think about physically how it has a disability changed. Has it deteriorated? Has it stayed as it was? So there was so much to play with there. One of the greatest experiences ever. I always say that about every job. One of the greatest experiences ever.
Until the next one. There was a long period between Don't Take My Baby and Years and Years Next Year. Was there ever a point when you thought, you know, I'm going to give up? Or was there ever a point where you thought this isn't going to happen?
No, I actually felt very... I was working on The Rook, that with Adrian Lester. I did a ITV show called The Level. I did The Greatest Wealth. So there were things happening. Did I feel that it was something that I could do sustainably as my career?
Because you had a job in between, didn't you? I mean, I just read a story where you went to your line manager and said something like, oh, I'm going to need some time off because I've got this job years and years. And she said, you know what, Ruth, I think you're an actress now.
Well, no, what happened was I stopped working for WizKids, the children's charity, and I've been involved with them my entire life. They bought me my first wheelchair when I was 5 years old. So I've always been involved with them. And then I worked as an employee for a long time. And I took a sabbatical when I got Years and Years. I just said, just keep my job open. Don't pay me for 6 months. Let me go and do this. Because every other job, I've worked weekends, I've done evenings, you know, just to kind of keep both, because I never thought it was sustainable to kind of just give up a job that I had a paycheck every month, reliability and all of that. What I didn't think that acting was something that I could pay my mortgage off, I guess, if, you know, in the long run. And then when I finished Years and Years, I got another role, not massive, but it was another role in Jack Thorne's The Accident. Mm-hmm. On Channel 4, I went to my manager then. I said, I just need to extend my sabbatical for a bit. Just give me another month or two just to go and do this. And that's when she said to me, she went, Ruth, I think you're an actor now. And I just was like, oh, good God, what have I done? But at the same time, I'm very much a believer that you end up where you're meant to end up. And that was the right time. That 1,000% was the right time to go. You know what? Yeah, you're right.
Ruth, it's great to talk to you. I hope we get to meet each other in person one of these days, because I'm a huge fan. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Who Am I This Time? Is a Just Voices and Doolally production. Produced by Simon Lenigan. Music by Greg Hatlow. Edited and mixed by Russ Keffert at Audio Egg. And presented by me, David Morrissey.